503-733-2970. Don't ask me anything you don't want me to say. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. I'll just say this, and I'm just going to say this. Anything you have done, any mistake you have made, any poor choices that you have made, anything that you might have done that you regret, just rest assured that I've done that to the power of 10 and that I've done it repeatedly. Done it over and over and over again. I really, in many ways, in all human relations, I'm like Homer Simpson, where he does that thing. Remember that thing where it was like he drops a donut or something into the deep fryer, and he just keeps reaching in after it, and it's like, donut, out, dough, donut, out, dough, donut, out, dough. That's me, just over and over and over again. So no matter how dumb you may feel like you are sometimes, I'm like 100 times dumber. I'm 100 times dumber, and I never goddamn learn, ever, 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 in any way. I know that
that
may not be a whole lot of consolation that you're slightly smarter than I am, but I'm just saying, you just got to know this to be true. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, can you imagine, hey, how about this? This will make you feel better about your life, Sarah. Can you imagine being the guy walking along the sidewalk in New York as that jumper disintegrated on the pavement right next to you?
You know somebody took some cell phone pictures.
What's on my shoes? Oh, that's probably... God, we're terrible people.
I know, but the Empire State Building, that place... I mean, all around, there's so much foot traffic, especially if people are waiting to get, into the Empire State Building. That line goes outside. Imagine if they landed on somebody who's waiting outside the building to go
sometimes
see the Empire State Building.
Sometimes there's foot traffic, and sometimes there's just feet. It's, I know that's a cheap joke. I had to reach for that. No, it's true. You know that's going to be... Well, I mean... Look, I don't think we've ever spoken of this on the air, but remember when that guy jumped off the Paramount downtown?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know... That, I don't, let's see, I'm trying to remember this in my head. Somebody sent us photographs, or sent me photographs, not of the dead guy, but of the sidewalk immediately after the cops had taken the body
away. Bloody and
gross. Yeah, it was all like a big blood swath. And I never put those on the, I mean, that was just,
that's
know,
wrong.
Too much.
Yeah.
But somebody, and the guy, I got the feeling, didn't do it to be morbid, but there just was all this debate. This is last year. On what we have termed, I hate to say this, what we have termed...
Joshua Jackson Day?
Well, and I was going to say best show ever, but not because of that guy, but just because it was a day when so many things happened. There was that, and there was Britney news, and there was like a fire, and there was like an earthquake, and then like something blew up somewhere, and it was really an amazing day. But there had been all this debate that day about whether a guy had actually jumped off that hotel downtown, and nobody seemed to know because the news department they have this whole thing where they won't talk about a guy who tossed himself off a building somewhere. That, which also, by the way, is, it's interesting that they're talking about a guy jumping off the Empire State Building, because if it's the news departments, if the news organizations typically don't talk about suicides. Anyway. So there had been all this debate about whether somebody had actually jumped off the Paramount, and a guy who I think honestly was just trying to settle the whole debate, took a photograph of the sidewalk after they had taken the body away, but there was, you know, some blood and some whatnot, and sent it to me. And I think I was like, I looked at him like, okay, fine, just done. It's in, thanks for that. In my head, great.
And now, I wonder if they're saying that they don't know that he was pushed or fell or anything because they're not supposed to report suicides. Didn't you say that media outlets don't do that?
I mean... I don't know. It seems like even on the 6th, and we are just speculating about all this. I'm sorry, I'm getting my coffee.
Well, he was a lawyer, so don't feel too bad.
He was a lawyer?
Yeah.
Wait, does that one work? Lawyer?
I barely knew her.
Sort of. It seems like even on the 60th floor of the Empire State Building, even though that's not, what do we say it is, 90 floors? 60th floor, that's two-thirds of the way up. You figure that they would take steps to make sure, look... You stay in a 15-story hotel, and you can't open the windows. I mean, you can't open the windows more than, like, 6 inches. And I would imagine if you get more than 20 or 25, stories up, that window is shatterproof. Like, when Laura and I stayed at the Crown Plaza in Times Square, we were on... Trying to remember what floor we were on when we were at the Crown Plaza. It was way up there. We were, like, on the 50th floor or something. I mean, it seemed like we were way up there. Windows opened, like, an inch. There was one window that opened like an inch. The other windows didn't open at all, and all of them had thick-ass glass. It was like 6 inches thick, it seemed. It seemed like it was full-on, like, bulletproof glass that you could not have broken if your life depended on it. So I can't imagine that the Empire State Building, and the Empire State Building further, we're talking about this guy that supposedly tossed himself off or in any event, went out a window, apparently, in New York a while back at the Empire State Building earlier, about 20 minutes ago. You would think also at the Empire State Building, because that has the added draw to jumpers of being sort of romantic, you know, like the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, if you're, you know, when in San Francisco, you know, kill yourself on the Golden Gate Bridge. That's the Empire State Building seems to have that draw if you probably live in New York. Speaking of which, and then we'll get Jim Roop here, and then we got these calls, and then we get all this crap to get you with the listener party and so forth, and Scott Daly's going to be here. Do you guys know about that documentary coming out about the Golden Gate Bridge? Or I guess it's already out.
No.
This guy is the creepiest thing. This guy was making a documentary about people who had jumped to their deaths from the Golden Gate Bridge, because that is a the Golden Gate Bridge is, again, I'm not trying to be flip about this.
It's the Cadillac of taking one's own.
That's what I'm trying to say. It does. It is sort of the preeminent jumping destination for the suicidal. This guy was making a documentary. Bless you. This guy was making a documentary about the whole phenomenon of people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. So he went to, I believe, the city of San Francisco. He didn't lie to them. He just didn't really fully explain the nature of the documentary. And what they let him do is they let him set up a stationary motion-activated camera on the Golden Gate Bridge, and he left it there for a year. He set up a camera at the Golden Gate Bridge, left it there for a year, and at the end, like going to a hard drive or whatever, and at the end of a year, he went back and reviewed the footage, and during that course of a year, the camera had caught two or three people coming up. You know, standing on the edge of the bridge. One of them jumped. One of them, I think, jumped and then, you know, they rescued. One of them stood on the edge for a while and then turned around and decided against it and walked home. But the camera caught these guys going to the Golden Gate Bridge and jumping. And it was all on this camera that the guy had mounted by the Golden Gate Bridge. And I guess he's now made it into a documentary that is either out or is coming out. And it's about the whole phenomenon of suicides.
That's pretty fascinating in a really morbid way.
And it's got this footage of people like walking, because the camera was motion activated, and walking in front of the camera and just sort of lingering there for a while. And I guess the one guy stands there for a while and finally goes, well, yep, and just like goes over the side. I mean, it's just the creepiest thing. So I may be getting some facts wrong, but I know that movie is either out or it's coming out. So, creepy. Is this, okay, Scotty, I'm going to take this call here, but we should be trying to figure out what the deal with Jim Roop is, because we were supposed to talk to him like 10 minutes ago. Well, that's not him, though.
That's not him?
That's not him. That's Susan Reynolds. So, Scotty, I will...
yeah, because Jim, it's Friday the 13th day.
I know. So, Scotty, I will talk to Susan here, and then we should find out the deal with Jim. So, all right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend, CBS Radio Portland marketing guru, Susan Reynolds.
Hey, you know, I have to tell you the story. When I was working in Chicago, and this is, you know, back in the 80s now, but a lot of tall buildings and older tall buildings that windows opened, and I stepped out of my office at lunchtime and was about to cross the street, and I caught something out of my peripheral vision, and all of a sudden there was this loud thud, and this woman came plunging down 33 stories, basically right in front of me. And the sound that it made, I will never forget. I mean, she landed on a car that was parked illegally, and it was...
That'll show them.
Yeah. Well, I think it was like an unmarked police car or something. Anyway, it was the craziest, creepiest, freakiest thing I've ever witnessed.
And how far, so let's say you're standing out there in the street, how far away from you did she land?
Well, I was in the middle of crossing, you know, so I was crossing at Michigan Avenue and Wacker Drive. If you've ever been to Chicago, you can picture what that intersection might look like at lunchtime. I mean, crazy busy. And so it was, you know, I was in the middle of the intersection, and she landed right on the corner in front of me.
Jesus.
And I thought to myself, oh, my God. I thought, well, first of all, she could have landed on me. And, I mean, I think time sort of stood still. I think I sort of froze in, like, it was the craziest thing ever.
Well, because you probably couldn't conceive, like, your brain probably didn't even process what you'd seen for a while.
No, not until the body landed on the car and, you know, and, I mean, oh, it was, and you know how you see a shoe just in the middle of an intersection?
Yeah.
Well, the shoes came flying off, you know. So that's generally, it's going to be somebody who was in some kind of horrific accident, I'm going to say. For some reason, shoes don't stay on.
I never really thought of it. There's clearly a design flaw that America's footwear manufacturers need to get in hand.
Yeah. And so then, you know, in the days and weeks and months and even years that followed, I'd be walking down the street and I'd think, all right, Do I walk closer to the building, closer to the street? You know, I mean, I was sort of always playing this game in my head because I never knew if another body was going to come flying, would it land on me or not?
I got two things to say about that. One, our good friend Jim Roop had this happen to him where a jumper landed on his car.
Oh!
He was in, I forget where, I think he was working for KFI at the time. He was in L.A. covering some story. He's parked somewhere. He's in a building. He hears a crash. He comes out and a guy has jumped off a building to his death and landed on the roof of Jim's car and completely destroyed it.
Yeah. Oh, this car was completely thrashed, and obviously so was the woman. I mean, and the story that came out later was that she had she was up on, there was a restaurant up on the top floor of this building, and she was having lunch with her husband and her son, but she had had some terminal illness, so she excused herself to go to the bathroom and then went right for the window.
Yeah, see, and maybe this makes me a terrible person, but sometimes when I'm, although I think that ship has probably already sailed, sometimes when I am walking through downtown Portland, and I guess maybe that doesn't make me, maybe it just makes me weird. When I'm walking through downtown Portland, I look up at buildings sometimes, and I don't expect to see a jumper, but I do wander through downtown Portland, and I idly wonder in the back of my brain which building I would use to kill myself should I decide to jump. I picked one out, by the way, in case anybody wants to know. I won't tell you what it is. I don't want there to be a run on it. But I will tell you, I have selected the building that I'll use. So, and it curves just right, too. So I'm just saying, it is, that's a thing that goes through my head when I'm walking around.
And then I'm saying steer clear of all buildings, because it's creepy.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's... yeah, I should probably end this conversation now before I say anything inappropriate. But it is really, it's a really disturbing notion. The whole notion of just suicide is just such a weird, I mean, we obviously there's a billion books and movies and therapy hours that have been done about that. It's just a weird concept, but I mean, there's, I mean, it's just strange, and that's what this documentary about the Golden Gate Jumper is.
Yeah, I've seen something about that. I think it's coming soon, but I know that I logged in a few therapy hours after this myself.
Yeah, all right, there you go. Susan Reynolds, CBS Radio Portland Marketing Guru. Thank you, Susan.
Yes, you're welcome.
All right, there you go. Watch the skies. All right, that's Susan Reynolds, ladies and gentlemen. All right, 503-733-2970. What were you, can I ask what you were nodding your head about when I was telling my building?
Oh, I totally look up at the top of buildings, too. I don't know if we're wired wrong or what.
Now, do you do it to see if people are jumping or because you're picking up the one that you'll jump from?
No, I don't do it to pick up the one I'm doing. No, I've never contemplated jumping.
I just
look on the tops.
Okay.
I don't know. I've always done that just in case.
Well, I think that's a human instinct. Because I think it's a thing that people are afraid
of. Especially since we know it happens, since it happened right in the middle of downtown Portland.
And people are afraid of heights, and I think you are instinctively drawn to look at what you're afraid of. So there's a fire, you look at fire. There's spiders, you're fascinated, you look at spiders. If you're afraid of heights, or if you know that it could kill you, I think that's why people look at the tops of buildings. When, you know, you always hear about the tourists who are in New York who are, like, walking around with their necks craned looking at the tops of, skyscrapers. I think that's because people know that that can kill you, and so it's a thing that idly fascinates them. My thing is a little different, but I mean, it's still a variation on the same thing, where you're just like, well, that building wouldn't be nearly high enough. And then there's that one downtown where you could jump, but then there's like that outcropping where they have some trees about halfway up the building. That's a kind of a strange thing. Rick, the therapy required after seeing that body hit, 5 years drugged therapy minimum. How weird. I know that I can't even fathom that. That would just be the strangest thing on earth. Let's see. I think I'm going to skip most of these. The time I saw a guy jump off a building email. And there's a startling number of these that I'm getting, by the way, people who have seen somebody jump off a building. The only thing I'll say is that when I was living in Salt Lake, I had a friend of mine who witnessed that, a guy I worked with, when there was a horrible case in Salt Lake where a woman went to the top of a building, tossed off her three kids, and then herself. And there was, like, my friend Dan, who was there.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, and he was, like, walking to lunch. He's like, lunch, what's that? And then he looked up at a building, and he just saw, like, three tiny specks and then a slightly larger speck. And it was, like, this woman, you know,
some
nutcase Mormon woman tossing off her three kids and then following. It was just the weirdest thing ever. What was that inhalation of oxygen for?
Oh, I was just reading. They have an update on that story, and it said that they received a 911 call about 2:50 because nobody saw him jump, but they reported seeing body parts on 33rd Street.
Oh, that's... Well, you'd think in New York they'd be sort of immune to that by now. They would just be used to it. Good God. So nobody saw the jump.
Well, I don't know if nobody saw, but it said they responded to a 911 call.
Not about a jumper, but they responded to a 911 call saying, there's a hand over here. Okay. 503-733-2970. Let's do these calls, then we'll break, and we'll come back with Tim Riley. Let's see here. Well, I'll just hit the next button. We'll see what comes up. Hi, Mike. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up?
Well, before I start, I want anybody who knows me or is listening to me who knows me right now to turn off the radio, because what I'm about to do is probably going to piss them off.
Now, what is it?
Well, anyway, okay.
Hold on. What is it? What is the... This makes me uneasy. What is the deal?
Okay. About a year ago on National Geographic, they had actually survivors, and they mapped out the anatomy of a fall off a building or an airplane or a parachute jump.
Yes.
And they had different stages of, you know, what you go through on the way down. It was very, very interesting.
All right. Well, let's avoid discussing the graphic details of that on the air just now.
Well, the most important thing they found was it's not the fall
now,
that kills you.
Now, hold on. Now, is this something that you need to ponder before you reveal it on the air, sir? Here's what we're going to do. Your nervous laughter at the beginning and your admonition to, quote, anyone who knows you to turn off the radio, I'm going to give you a minute here to think about that. So, Mike, have you thought about it?
I have to do it, Rich.
Have you've considered this? All right, now
I have to do it. I just can't not share.
All right,
with everybody.
Well, let's move forward. Let's get this over with.
Okay, you want to get it over with? There's three aspects to a fall. Okay, it's not the fall that kills you; it's the sudden stop at the end that does you. Should I go on any farther, or am I done?
I can't possibly imagine what the other two phases of this be, but you know what? Let's cut our losses, friend, and we'll just...
How about number two? What's the last thing you see just before you hit the ground?
I don't know the answer to that.
Your rear end.
No, yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
We're done.
Okay.
We're not going to give you number three.
No.
Thank you. That's like
everyone is insane today.
Yeah, it's one of those days. There's something really wrong with the callers. We're waiting on Jim Rip. Scotty's having, you'll never believe this, Scotty's having some technical problems. Look at that look on Jim's face. That look on Jim's face was the greatest faux surprise, the greatest mock surprise I've ever seen. Really? All right, is this Jim Rip? All right, I feel bad about this whole thing. We got all these... What is that, Tim? Tim, please be explaining that look on your face right now. How would you? What is the thought going through your mind right now, Tim?
Well, you know, you get to Friday, and you take into account all the little shocks along the week.
Uh huh.
And by the time these other ones show up, you've pretty much been through them five or six times already.
So you're beyond caring.
Yes.
You've become numb to all of it.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. All right, Sarah, here's where we are. I got a full bank of calls. I got a break. I got Jim Rip. I got Tim Riley.
All right, we
got
to
go.
Jim.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles.
Hello,
CNN radio correspondent and golden god, Jim Rip. Hello, sir.
Hey, you know, I can always call back.
I hate to make you do that. Can I ask, and I don't want to air our business on the air, but now we're having a lot of technical problems in the building today.
Yeah.
Were we trying to get a hold of you and we couldn't? Were you trying to get a hold of us and you couldn't? What
I think
was...
I was a little bit of both.
All right. We're the phones have been acting weird. Quest, which is our phone company, are in the building right now.
Oh, good.
Quote, fixing, end quote, things. So we're trying to get it. So we are aware that there's some gremlins on the wing of the plane, as they say.
I guess.
So hey, let me ask you this. A side note, we were talking about this. Have you heard about this movie? This is a movie that came out. There's this guy that just jumped off the Empire State Building about an hour ago.
Oh, really?
And he's dead. And so we were talking about. Have you heard about this Golden Gate documentary? This guy made a documentary called, I believe it's just called Jumper. And it is about, let's see, it's called The Bridge by Eric Steele. It is a documentary where a guy put up a stationary camera by the Golden Gate Bridge for a year. And over 1 year, he actually, okay, this is staggering. Listen to this. I'm reading this from ABC News. He put a stationary camera, motion activated by the Golden Gate Bridge for a year with the city's permission. Over the year period, how many people do you think he actually caught on film jumping from the bridge?
10?
23.
No, really?
Because they don't report that stuff. The media doesn't typically report jumpers for whatever reason. He caught 23 people jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge on film, and it's in this documentary called The Bridge, which is about the sort of weird magnetic hold that bridge has on people in a suicidal sense.
Wow.
Anyway, so this guy just jumped off the Empire State Building, and I'm not going to make you retell the story about the jumper, but I will say that our marketing director, Susan Reynolds, she told the story about when she was in Chicago. She was like coming out of some place where she was having lunch, and a woman landed on a car right at, like, 15 feet from her.
Well, I told you guys it landed on my car, didn't I?
Yeah, I passed your story along to her so she would feel a little bit better about that. So, somebody's pointed out it is Friday the 13th, though. That might explain a lot of this.
There you are.
So, well, speaking of Friday the 13th, Jim Roop, what kind of shenanigans are you up to?
I didn't do the hockey mask.
Oh, well, you sickened me.
I did wear my clothes inside out and went into a Starbucks to talk to people.
Really? Now, why... why are you wearing your clothes inside out today?
Well, I was trying to figure out what to do, and I saw this thing in this Common Superstitions website that said wearing your clothes inside out brings you good luck. And I went, wow, let's try it. So I did it.
And so did you in fact find that did the wearing your clothing inside out give you good luck? Was the barista especially attractive?
I got a lot of weird comments and looks.
You would think in Los Angeles that the people wouldn't really be... it would take a lot more to stun them at this point.
Yeah, well, the hardest part was zipping the zipper.
I can imagine. We could ask how you use the bathroom. Tell me there are photos of you wandering around with your clothing inside out.
I don't think so.
Really?
They don't send a camera crew with me, you know, on the radio.
Don't they know that you're Jim Roop?
Yeah.
Don't they understand the magic of the man?
I could always get on camera if I go to the Golden Gate Bridge, however.
I was going to say, that might be an easy way to draw a little bit of attention.
Yeah, probably.
All right.
It was wacky. It was fun. It was all about Friday the 13th.
Okay. Hey, but because it is Friday, we're wrapping this up. We are now required by law to ask everybody this question. Would you like to weigh in on Imus before we put that in the vault of things we never talk about again?
I think he was railroaded.
No, I think there is a lot of... Here's the phrase I hear a lot, which I do not necessarily disagree with. I hear the phrase, a disproportionate response. And I think...
Overreaction. Where's the forgiveness? That's my question.
Well, apparently, that's the weird thing about it, is that everybody involved and purportedly everybody offended has forgiven him, and yet, you know... And yet he's still, it's not like he's going to be picking up cans to pay the rent, clearly.
Well, look,
but I mean,
when rap lyrics change, when comics stop using the same language, then I'll give you a couple of comments. But for right now, it's too hypocritical.
It does sort of surprise me. I mean, the guy, you know, there are people who are basically hired and employed to be a-holes. I mean, that's the thing. And again, not to excuse what he's thinking, something I would say. You know, Tom Likas had drawn this distinction, that Likas says a lot of things that rub people the wrong way. But it's sort of but Imus does it in one way, and this show does it in another way. And, you know, it's not stuff that we would do. But by the same token, you also can't deny that sometimes media companies, whoever they are, there are people who are kind of hired and their job is to be a dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just nobody, it would be disingenuous to deny that. So I don't think it's not that there shouldn't have been anything done, but it really does. There are a lot of people who do feel like it is a vastly disproportionate response.
I'm not saying what he said wasn't horrible.
Right.
It was. But in the context, if you listen to the show, he was talking about, I think he was talking about rap lyrics or rap songs or something, and he just kind of launched into this thing.
Yeah, it's just, I think, and also it was just, you know, it was a slow news week, and there wasn't a whole lot going on, and the media likes to sink their teeth into something, and I think this turn of the wheel, it happened to be him. So.
Well, look, he's had a good run. 40 years.
Well, Tim Riley was funny. It's been 30 years since he got fired last time. Yeah. I'm amazed when I meet anybody who's gone like 9 years without being fired.
Yeah, longest for me is 7.
Yeah, it's true.
And I've hit that mark again. I'm at my 7th year, so I'm nervous.
I'm trying to remember the longest stretch I've had without being fired. God damn, I can't even really remember. I think four, maybe? Three?
Really?
God damn my life. It's just, I can't even remember. All right, just all the firings all blend together. All right. Well, my brother, enjoy your weekend. We will have speaks with you in the immediate future. Try not to walk under any ladders or whatever.
I will stay clear.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. There's Jim Roop. It's 503-733-2970. All right, Sarah, what are we breaking? We'll come back with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show, live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Just 6 days away from Listener Party 10, happening next Thursday, April 19th, 7 p.m., Barracuda. Featuring music by Britney Spears' hard rock cover band Hit Me Baby, also Emerson Starship, a cast of thousands, a lot of appearances by the people who played a part in the Rick Emerson Show over the years, a very special mystery guest whose identity we cannot reveal. By the way, we mentioned this yesterday, there's a great song that's just been added to the Emerson Starship set list. We can't tell you what it is, but there's a song that you will all recognize that you probably never thought you would hear performed live. That's all I'm going to say about that. And that's been added to the Emerson Starship set list. So that is all happening next Thursday, April 19th, 7 p.m. Barracuda, Rick Emerson Listener Party 10. And by the way, since 1991, nail gun injuries have risen 200%. Every year in the continental United States, about 37,000 nail gun injuries happen every year. It's 503-733-2970. More of your calls here in just a second. If you're on hold, hang tight. We'll get to you. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, your president, prophet, seer, and revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Okay, so now that Al Sharpton got his way, and Jesse Jackson did too, other politicians are jumping in, wanting to get their least favorite talk show host fired. Our Republican presidential hopeful, Mike Huckabee, who knew he was running? Mike Huckabee? He said he'd never win.
No, he's apparently not going to win anything.
Apparently he's running for president.
Yeah, it's not going
to
work.
Well, now he wants to get rid of Rosie O'Donnell and Bill Mayer.
Have they started calling her Tokyo Rosie?
That'll be the next thing. They'll call
maybe
her
next.
You know, I got to say that Dennis Miller came up with a great... I think he came up with it when he was calling Hillary Shrillery Clinton, which is pretty great. I'm pretty... If they haven't started saying Tokyo Rosie, they will yet. That'll start happening any day now.
So let's see. Who else wants to get rid of somebody? Tom DeLay would like to get rid of Rosie. And that's the only one so far.
Rosie at the top of everybody's list, and Bill Maher. Why?
He didn't explain why.
All right. Well, okay.
There's so everybody should come up with their the people that they want to get rid of.
Bill Maher. Well, never mind. I'm not going to get into the whole Bill Maher thing. Rosie O'Donnell, you don't need to worry about. She's going to be gone off that show probably in less than 6 months anyway. As soon as her contract lapses, you're not going to renew that.
Well, apparently, let's see here. Tom DeLay wrote in a posting entitled, "If the left takes Imus, we'll take Rosie," on his website today, saying, quote, "What are the repercussions of Rosie O'Donnell's hateful, idiotic accusations that the president's behind the 9/11 attacks?" And then she counters on her blog, "Hey, Tom DeLay, you are a criminal. Go away."
Okay, that's pretty funny. All right, I think Rosie wins that round. Well done. You know, here's the thing about Rosie O'Donnell is that it's really strange, actually, that I simultaneously loathe her so much, and yet I can't hate her. That's the thing. I don't know what it is. I've got a weird sort of entwined Oreo cookie kind of a thing going on with her, where it's like loathing sandwich with sort of this weird admiration for her. I don't know if I'm the only one who feels that way. Rosie O'Donnell is so personally irritating and annoying to me, but as long as I don't have to see her or hear her or ever know what she's doing, I kind of like her. And I kind of like the fact that she's just got big brass ones, and she just doesn't care. And anybody, she has no problem telling somebody to get stuffed. I think it's just that I don't want to hear it because she irritates me so much. And Bill Maher's very much the same way, by the way. I love Bill Maher in theory. I like the idea of Bill Maher, but I find Bill Maher himself to be really irritating a lot of the time. So it is with Rosie O'Donnell. I like the fact that she's got a spine, she's got big brass ones that she can just throw around, but I would just rather not have to be the one who hears it. So anyway, so she wins that one. So a point to Rosie.
Well done. So that's that. Meanwhile, let's get back to the person who jumped off the Empire State Building.
Fantastic.
Story. The victim is apparently a lawyer. Now, don't ask me how they know that so soon. Who committed suicide? And it says here, jumping from his office on the 69th floor of the building, no word on his identity. Witnesses say the victim's body was dismembered upon impact, and the body parts scattered on the street. And when they saw that, somebody called 911 regarding seeing body parts. So the street is closed around there, and CBS 2 is rushing to the scene. We hope they get there eventually. Let's go back to the 1970s, when everyone who had their heyday there thinks that time period is still relevant today. Actor-comedian Chevy Chase says he has some regrets that he quit SNL in 1976.
Hello, it's 2007, Chevy.
No, we have to bring all that back, just like the big DJs of that time, because people are demanding this stuff.
But, I mean, is this... Chevy, is this really the right date to be bringing up the fact that you regret leaving SNL 35 years
in
ago?
In 1976.
Glad you finally...
He said
around.
Season 1 was a huge mistake, like... That's what everyone's thinking about right now. Season 1 of SNL in 1976 was a huge mistake because he didn't make a movie for 2 years between 1976 and 1978.
I'm glad
there were no lucrative deals awaiting me.
I'm glad he's addressed the issue that was on everyone's mind today.
And because you're wondering why, well, I left because I was in love with a girl in L.A. who's probably somebody's grandmother by now. I miss it very much.
Really? Do you suppose that
and
maybe...
I feel bad about it now.
Do you suppose your therapist's office might be a more conducive outlet for these thoughts, Chevy? It's... No one cares. It's...
1976?
I'm sorry, this is snort again. Do you know how many episodes of SNL Chevy Chase did?
No.
I do. I know the answer to that. It's 11. It's weird that you think about him being like this cast member who was on for the first couple years, but he wasn't even on a full season. He was on for 11 episodes. That's it. Kind of like how Sam the Butcher was only ever in 2 episodes of the Brady Bunch, but everybody remembers him being there all the time. Chevy Chase left. He did a whole series of terrible films.
One of the most regrettable, he said, it was because he fell in love with a girl in L.A.
I'm glad he's decided to really straighten it. I was tossing and turning, frankly, most of the last 34 years of my life, trying to figure out exactly what Chevy Chase's thoughts about leaving. As though we didn't know that when he comes out and says, I regret leaving SNL. Really, as though an independent observer would have drawn any other conclusion from your completely inert and pointless career.
We've always wondered why he did that.
Seriously, I've always wondered if he thought it was a mistake. Do you suppose that Chevy Chase regrets leaving SNL to make Foul Play and Vegas Vacation? I wonder. Let's sit and think about it a lot, shall we? I wonder if he regrets leaving one of the most innovative, celebrated, groundbreaking comedic television programs of all time to make Modern Problems. I can't possibly imagine that. So, there you go. You want to read a depressing how-to on ruining your career, by the way? Read Chevy Chase's whole Wikipedia entry. So,
did he write it himself?
No. I think if he'd written it himself, it might have had a glowing review of anything that he did post-SNL. Post-SNL, he did, I'll give him National Lampoon's Vacation. I might eat, if I'm feeling charitable, I might even give him Christmas Vacation. And Fletch. And, of course, we would give him Fletch, of course. He absolutely, which is probably the best thing he ever did when he left SNL. It might be the best thing he did, period. I'd give him Fletch. That's it. There's nothing else. No one else. I defy anybody to call up and give me another. And really, I mean this. And this is not rhetoric. I defy you to call up and give me the name of another indisputably great Chevy Chase. Even it sounds absurd. Listen to the phrase leaving my mouth. An indisputably great Chevy Chase production. Another indisputably wonderful Chevy Chase project. That's a phrase that's never been uttered by anybody. Why? There are no other indisputably great Chevy Chase products ever at all of any kind. I'm sorry. See, even now I'm talking about it. No one cares. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the bingo ban is apparently dead as far as the Alabama House is concerned. The bill would have legalized bingo at Alabama's dog tracks with proceeds used to... apparently for their sick people. A lot of sick people there. So there'll be no bingo to help sick people.
Where?
There was supposed to be a soundbite here. Alabama. Well, all right. Let's pause here. Well, this white screen does something.
We're not looking at bringing that bill back anytime soon.
All that, wait for that.
Oh, my darling little woodcock.
That was going to be my go-to soundbite for everything. I'm sorry you're having a bad day, technically, Tim. Don't worry about it. I want to come give your computer a big hug. And then kick it down.
There'll be no touching my computer.
and then set
the
it on.
The computer does not like to be touched.
Set it on fire. Computer? Ah, oh, damn it. No, that was me. That was instant karma for making fun of your computer woes. It wouldn't play my thing here. Let's get a couple of these jumper calls, shall we? That'll perk everybody up. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
This isn't Mike.
Great. Fantastic. That's wonderful. Hey, what do you think about Chevy Chase's career?
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah, okay. What did you?
Chris, I was gonna say if you can call it Chevy Chase movie, Caddyshack would be the only other one on that you'd want to add to that list.
If you can call it a Chevy Chase movie, you could argue it's a Rodney Dangerfield movie, a Bill Murray movie. And I will say this: I will break with most of my generation and say that I'm not a huge Caddyshack fan. Now, I acknowledge there are a lot of funny moments. I like Bill Murray sort of as this stone groundskeeper, although he's funnier to me when he's kind of a smart guy in his movies. I'm not a massive Caddyshack fan. I know that it's got big cult appeal. I'm not the hugest fan. But, okay, we could, I guess, maybe say Caddyshack. I suppose, yes.
Okay.
All right, I guess we can agree on that sort of tentatively. Somebody else suggested Three Amigos. I would say the Three Amigos is interesting unless you go back and watch it after the age of 10, in which case it's less funny. All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
That came out around the same time as Edward Scissorhands.
Three Amigos?
Yeah.
Three Amigos is funny if you're about 12 years old. I mean, my brother and I watched it. My little brother and I, we watched it. We found it hilarious. You watch it now, it's not really going to be, it's not going to be all that amusing. It's going to be one of many, many, many mediocre projects that Steve
Martin. Oh, Young Guns was out around that same time, too.
Young Guns?
Yeah.
Young Guns with Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yes.
All right. Young Guns is actually not a bad movie. Young Guns still kind of holds up. Young Guns 2, not so much. Young Guns still kind of holds up. You know what holds up is Silverado. Man, I would encourage you all to go back and watch Silverado. That's still a fan-freaking-tastic movie. Frank, hi.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
What's up?
Not much. That Always Towing Company, they're actually in Estacada, too. Because they're right behind my house. Their shop.
Oh, this is the towing company that crashed into the house in Gresham.
Yeah, I can actually probably get you a picture of the truck that went through the house.
That's okay. It's probably better.
We'll go to Gresham anytime.
Yeah.
Do the same thing.
That would ruin the fun of my field trip to Gresham, sir.
Okay.
That was a great little laugh. That was a great forced courtesy laugh. But you say that their shop is behind you in Estacada?
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Okay, so, all right, yeah, just the notion of any house in Gresham really requiring thousands of dollars to fix it is sort of...
And the sad part is that was a newer tow truck, from what my wife said.
I like how the sad part is not that it destroyed a house.
It was someone's life savings.
Okay, that's funny. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, that's Frank. Mr. Blandings builds his dream house in Gresham. Sid, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, you're missing one great Chevy film here.
Uh-huh.
Jane Seymour, Omar Sharif, Benji, Oh Heavenly Dog.
I haven't seen Oh Heavenly Dog since I was about 12. Is that still funny? All I remember is that creepy scene where Chevy Chase dies, goes to heaven, and comes back as a dog.
Right.
He comes back as, I swear to God, a crime-solving dog who has to solve his own murder. So Chevy Chase dies. He's murdered. He goes to heaven. The only body they have available is a dog, so he comes back as a dog to solve his own murder. All I remember is that creepy scene where he jumps into what's-her-name's bath while she's all nude. And he's a horny dog. He's a horny dog jumping into the bath with a nude woman that he wants to have Congress with. That's creepy. It was creepy to me as a kid.
That's just wrong.
It's completely wrong. I mean, it was just... It's not even funny wrong. It's just weird.
Right. It's Chevy.
Yeah, well, that... Was it really Benji?
Yeah.
Benji. Whatever happened... Well, he's dead. I was going to say whatever happened to Benji. He died. There you go.
Right. Chevy shared some blow with him and, you know, went downhill for him after that.
Okay, that's funny.
Bye, Rick.
Benji snorting blow off a hooker somewhere. Anywho, I was more of a Boomer fan myself, as opposed to Benji. Really, are we really getting this many calls about Chevy Chase? Perhaps Tim and I misread the cultural zeitgeist.
Perhaps our finger was incorrect on the cultural pulse. Todd inexplicably calling about Chevy Chase. Hello, sir.
Can we all just sit back and reflect on how great the Chevy Chase talk show was, the late night show?
All five episodes of it?
Oh, it was beautiful.
I never saw it. Did you ever watch it?
Yeah. He had a little keyboard right next to his desk there. And when he got really slow, he'd just lean over and play like a really crappy song.
When it got really slow. At those rare moments when the Chevy Chase talk show wasn't a laugh riot. Yeah. I never, ever saw it. I remember Stern, I remember Howard predicting that it would be gone in 6 months, and it took less than that. It was like 6 weeks. That's all, yeah.
it was not good, but the great thing about Chevy Chase, he was in a psychedelic band back in the 60s. So.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Hey, this just in, Pete Best regrets leaving the Beatles. All right, thank you. Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Rick.
You know what, Pete Best, who is the original drummer of the Beatles, you know what he does now? Manages a supermarket. That's got to be a fun life. Let's see. Rush? What?
Russ.
It's Scotty. His name is not Rush. Russ. Hello, sir.
Another not a bad Chevy Chase movie was Foul Play.
Oh, is that with Goldie Hawn?
That was Goldie Hawn.
All I remember, I don't remember much about Foul Play.
It was not a bad movie, but the rest of them had pretty much sucked.
Yeah, all I know is that Goldie Hawn used to be really hot, and now she's kind of freaky looking. I was just thinking about this the other day, though. How cool is Hawn still together, though? That's a pretty great Hollywood. I don't think they're married either, but that's a pretty great Hollywood relationship. I would say that's actually now. I would call Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn the benchmark Hollywood relationship.
Maybe that's what it takes.
Maybe, with the exception of Paul Newman and his wife. Because Paul and Newman and his wife have been together for like 80 years or whatever. So yeah. All right. I'm with that. All right, Russ. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Rick.
Goldie Hawn. Boy, she was just... She was hot back in the day. Not quite as hot as Terry Garr. Speaking of which, we got that email yesterday from Carol, who's a listener in Tucson, Arizona, who said that she and her friend are coming up from Tucson, Arizona, simply and solely for Rick Emerson Listener Party 10. She said that she looked like Terry Garr and that her friend was cute, too, and I sort of knocked that. I was poking fun at her friend, who I've never seen. And she says, my friend is totally cute. We are looking forward to our trip to Portland and going to Listener Party X. I will call you guys Thursday around 11:30 when we're in town. See you all soon, Carol in Tucson. So that's cool. Party 10, totally, coming in coming next Thursday, 7 p.m. Barracuda, etc. All right. Well, yeah. Now, we should break. We'll come back. Scott Daly is here. We'll see how close Tim gets to a nervous breakdown as we try to do more news. It is Friday, though. Not even any... I know that smile. That's just a whole lot of... Someday I'm going to kill a lot of people. That's what that smile is. Holding down the murderous rage. All right. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.